Welcome to Broken Shovel Homesteading for a Sustainable Future. If you weren't watching on YouTube, I got a little hand jive going in with the theme song today. I am Lucas. With me, as always, is my friend and co-host.
Eric.
We are pre-recording this episode, full disclosure. But if you would like to communicate with us about anything that we say or do, reach out to us, brokenshovel802@gmail.com. We are pre-recording this episode because we're going to get busy soon in spring. Today is March 1st. So if there's some sort of breakthrough in homesteading technology, we didn't know about it yet. Eric, how are you today?
I'm here. I got my stuff out so I can start doing seeds. So I'm starting my some of my seeds now and getting things ready, 'cause it's March and I like to get the to like at least like the tomatoes and like the big sunflowers going now.
We're starting next week. Oh, and I guess I didn't say what we're talking about today. So this kind of came out of a we were spitballing ideas, and it was I was thinking like a this or that situation, but gardening versus homesteading, and kind of what those two terms mean and what they mean to us, and what our plans are for 2024. Last year was really difficult and challenging,
Dismal.
not just for us, but for people across Vermont. But I'm just gonna let me sink here. So March 1st, you are starting seeds when? Today?
Today. Yep,
Today.
I have
Okay.
my little seed trays out. I've got to get my coconut shavings all nice and damp so I can add them, and then I'm gonna start mainly gonna start tomatoes and peppers right now, and then maybe sunflowers, but really starting tomatoes and peppers, and then I will also I'm gonna start a bunch over every few weeks. I will start another set as like things grow and start coming in. I will keep growing more because I really want to make this. I really like this goes into like my One of my thoughts on like what makes a homestead versus what makes a garden is I'm growing with the idea that I want to earn some money also and have things to preserve from my garden.
Yeah, and that is really just the basics of homesteading is generating for yourself as well as having a little extra to engage in commerce. We're waiting until next week for the sole reason that we use a lot of natural daylight in our new dining room and kitchen area to keep light on them. But March 8th, I believe, is the time change, or soon thereafter, with daylight savings time. So it will actually afford me more time during daylight hours when I'm awake to interact with the plants, monitor the plants, make sure everything is going well,
March
babysit
10th,
them.
we're close.
March 10th. So that weekend, that's when we're starting. So if you're starting peppers, you can try the chamomile tea trick.
I don't have any chamomile tea at the time, so I'm just gonna do it the old
Just
fashioned
do
my old fashioned way of like, here's some dirt seeds, have fun.
Yes, and I'm just going to refresh the chamomile tea trick for folks if you're listening in a different growing zone or something. But I recently learned that if you have a cup of chamomile tea, save the tea bag, and then make another cup of chamomile tea with that same tea bag, and let that cool. And then put your pepper seeds in there. It will help their germination. You're basically your success rate and rate of growth, which I think is super cool. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, Meg and I have been in the business of making money off of our homestead for a while. It's something we've strived for many years, and now we're kind of like kicking it into gear. So it's really exciting to start having other people around me do it. And about the time, especially you because I'm able, I have some resources that I'm able to loan to you essentially that are gonna, I think, make it easier to get started, which is something I really like doing. By the time this is released, we're fully into farmers market season, which is one of those places where I love to do that and like teach people and help them. So super excited about it. Now, what is your most ambitious goal for 2024, would you say?
I mean, it's the salsa. That's what it is. Like that's my big focus. Like I have a lot of little things going. Like I have the chickens and the eggs. I've got other things that I'm going to be planting that I plan on canning slash doing like pickles later on. But like really like this year, I really want to work on the salt on making salsas and having enough to potentially sell and not just have for myself.
Okay. And do you want to walk us through what salsas you're thinking of this year?
Yes, well, I'm doing salsas of a particular color, which poor Lucas didn't get the Wizard of Oz reference that has.
Yeah, in our composting episode. And I forgot to ask Megan about that, so I'm still in the dark.
Yes. Yes, the salt for those who get Wizard of Oz, it's the salsa of a particular color. Because I found the idea that spurned this is that there was a purple tomato that was advertised by a certain seed company that ended
Yes.
up that they ended up not selling it anymore, which is hilarious. But yes, it's very purple, and I thought, well, what if I use that? And then that same company also had very a purple jalapeno or a dark jalapeno pepper, which also peppers you can get dark colored anyways, like already. And so I was just like, well, what happens? I do my salsa recipe, but use these dark tomatoes, dark peppers, and like red onions instead of white onions. So I get like a very purple salsa. And then I was like, also going through, and I'm like, wait. They also have like yellow jalapenos and very yellow tomatoes. So I'm like, well, why not make a yellow salsa? And then all of a sudden I'm like, wait, there's also orange, which the orange one is going to be a tough one to actually do the salsa of a particular color because one of the tomatoes I'm using and the jalapeno I'm using is called pumpkin spice. So it's one of those unavoidable naming conventions that it's pumpkin spice salsa, but no pumpkin spice was used in the making of this salsa.
Yeah, it's like you can call it like trend free pumpkin spice
Yes, trend free.
salsa or something. So, that's cool. I think our most ambitious stuff is getting into high tunnels and really the chickens is going to be happening this year. And which aren't really super challenging things, but they're just very new things to us
Yes.
and those progressions. Of course, as always in spring, I am hyper focused on planting trees. We bought the only cleared lot in all of Vermont, and we are working desperately to retree it and just have that's the sort of security that comes with trees, as far as food sources, and windbreaks and future firewood. We've already got a few walnuts planted. We have several chestnut trees planted, with more on the way, I think. And I think I'm up to somewhere around 30 apple trees, about half of which produce right now. So it's one of those things where it's just, I just got to keep nurturing these things up out of the ground, so maybe in a few years I'll have it. And I think that's the hardest part about having ambition at some of these things is, as
The
a
long-term
homesteader,
planning.
as a homesteader, you got to look way down the road.
Yeah, like I use my blackberries as a great example of this. Is like when I was a kid, I had great blackberry and raspberry patches, and then over the years, the undergrowth and stuff just kind of encroached. They kind of went away, but then when I moved back here, 12, 15, God, 15 years ago. I started clearing out my wood line on the edge where those patches were, and it has taken 10 years for the blackberry patches to really start coming back enough to where I have a large volume of blackberries to actually like do something with, like if I wanted to make jams and other things.
Right. Well, and now, you know, now you're trapped in the maintenance, which is again just something I don't think we really talk about enough on this show, is the maintenance. You know, we talk a lot about planning and preparation and being, you know, correctly responsive to situations, but the maintenance is something we rarely talk about. And you know that, and this is something I had a conversation with Meg's younger sibling with probably I think last spring, where I basically said everything is maintenance here, but you don't think about it because you're constantly doing it. And again, it's like the preparation and, you know, the emails we've gotten from your sister, you know, about preparation. It's like, it's easy to forget because we're always doing it. It never stops. And it can be a lot, but now you're going to have blackberries and in good number, I hope, and less work because it's maintenance rather than fighting for it after non-maintenance.
Yes. It's a matter of like cutting out the shrubs out, pulling the weeds out periodically to grow in. And that's all I do. Like in the spring, I'll go through and just kind of like clear some stuff out around them. And then, I just let it go for the summer and just see how it does.
Did I tell you we're doing huckleberries this year?
I believe yes.
Yeah, I'm so excited about the huckleberries. We're branching out into the berries a lot more too, because we do great strawberries. Are you going to need more strawberries this year, you think?
Let's see how the patch does this year, because they all looked like they were already putting off sprouts, and like I had at least one strawberry grow in the middle of fall, which is like, what's wrong with you? You're a spring.
Yeah, I'll have to thin it in the spring. So if you want more, we can work that out.
Yeah, we'll see how it looks after I like do my garden raising, which is also like that's one of my big long-term planning projects, is getting my garden like up, like the whole entire grade up, so it does it. It will produce better, and if we do have another very wet year, it has much better drainage and will. The water will wash away much better and not wash away my crops.
Right. Yeah. You drowned last year.
Yes. I couldn't walk in my garden for months. It was just like, yep, you're growing like very slowly because you're wet, but I can't step foot in you.
And you are implementing some trees this year. We've talked about. So so I know we've talked about you coming up here to get some quaking aspens because they're super fast growing. They hold on to their leaves for a really long time. They're great trees. They grow fast. They're you know, halfway decent firewood if you're in a pinch. It's essential. I think it's poplar. I think it's in the poplar family, but I don't have my tree book in front of me right now. Are you thinking about any other trees to throw into the mix with that or shrubbery or anything? Because I know you're going to cut yours is a privacy screen.
Yes, I'm doing a privacy slash just like a barrier between my yard and the road. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I have a long term, like I want to build the old European style living fence. So I have a lot of different ideas bumping around, like a soft wood, like a willow that I can like potentially, because for a living fence, like you have to actually like cut it, bend them down and like take them down so they grow in a certain way. And you have to do this every year to keep it like going. Then I've also have thought of getting something that like grows fast and is burnable that I could potentially just do my space would be about a foot between rows and do multiple rows every year and then be able to just rotate rows and such.
What's the moisture content in that area like? Is it
soaked?
Okay. You might want to consider some basket willow. You know, it's lower. It'll be really easy to go into that living fence, and it won't get as tall. And if you don't like where it is or what it's doing, just cut it all back, and it'll all be back the next year. And you can weave some baskets out of it. We put some in last year, so we're gonna kind of see how it goes, you know, in our very, very wet spot. And I'm adventuring into sugar maple, which I'm really excited about because I'd like to produce just enough for us. And I've got a few maples around, and then I'm just planting one in a kind of a show-off spot, so it looks really nice when you pull into the driveway. But yeah, I'm buying a 10-foot sugar maple, which is not cheap. But thanks to my in-laws, they gave me a gift card for my birthday this year to my favorite tree farm, which is East Hill Tree Farm. Highly recommend them to anybody that's looking for trees. They're a bit of a haul. I can't remember where they are exactly, but it's like a 40-minute drive for us. But I've never had a problem with a single one of their trees. So, what else? What else are we doing this year?
Well, I mean, not just that. Like, we go to like we should probably mention things like what makes our homesteads not just hob
Garden.
gardens. Because like I also like one of the terms I came up with is like gardening is at the difference between personal gardening and homestead gardening feels to me it's like a hobbyist.
Right.
Where it's like
Well,
personal, you're doing it more as like a hobby to like have fresh food, have a fresh salad a couple times over the summer and the like, but and less long-term planning of like, nope, I'm growing these to preserve stuff, to make sure that I have fresh things in the winter time, etc.
You know, something that I think is just like I don't want to say a red flag, but just a flag that tells me that it's a difference between a home garden or a hobby garden and a homestead is a table at the end of the driveway with free zucchinis on it.
Yes, that
You
that
know,
is amazing.
if I get so many zucchinis, I'm finding ways to use them to preserve them and to hold on to them for self-sustainability or you know, to engage in commerce and sell them to people who don't do any of this.
You know, if you shred it and freeze it, it'll keep for up to 3 months in the freezer shredded.
It's and heck, you know, make a couple of loaves of zucchini bread and
And
sell
those freeze
slices.
really, those slices, oh, they freeze well too.
They do. And you know, sell slices for 50 cents. That's, you know, you sell four slices and you just got back your seed packet. You know, it's just, you know, but you know, the home garden, the hobby garden, I've done that. Meg and I have done that when we lived in California. Our garden was just for us. I did have a little table out at the end of the driveway with free stuff that I just didn't know what to do with. I ended up becoming motivated to find ways to preserve that and keep that. And, you know, I am a garden hoarder in that I don't like giving stuff away that we grew without some level of recompense. So, I mean, what do you think makes the difference between them?
Another one is like focus on the aesthetic and flowers.
I mean, a flower garden, first of all, I fully encourage a flower garden.
Yes,
You know.
we encourage flowers, we encourage pollinators, but when it's more about like I like to do the nasturtiums because they're pretty, or the what is the tall the not chrysanthemums,
Like irises and stuff like that.
yeah, stuff like that, yeah. And but there's a no there's a there's an a, there's a there's an annual one that goes
We a lot of our flower garden is also usable.
yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, that's the difference. Like, yeah, it's like one of those like my mom used to plant certain flowers just because she liked that they were pretty, which is oh no problem doing that. But
Great for
like
pollinators.
yours doing like you're thinking of like, hey, can this be used as a dye? Can this be turned into a food? Can this be used in this or that?
Yeah, well, it's like nasturtium leaves or petals were ending up in the salad mixes that we were selling at the farmers market last year because they're delicious and edible and beautiful and different from what everybody else is doing in their lettuce mixes. You get this little peppery flavor from them, and it's there. You know, there was nasturtiums on our wedding cake. It was they're edible. Eat them. They're beautiful. You know, and as you're out in the garden, just grab a couple of petals and snack on them. They're really good for you, high in vitamin C. A decorative garden. You know, I think of more like a British garden. Where it's just sort of like, here's my hedgerow, here's my perfect rows of flowers. I have a little patch of tomatoes and cucumbers and things like that. But you know, that's just because I need diversity to be able
Yeah,
to
see, I
grow
think
things.
I think of like my little patch that's right in front of my house is my more hobby garden, because that's got my shrubs that are just kind of like they're there. Like, I don't do anything with it. There's a few bulbs that come up in the back. I got some daffodils and some actual irises that come up. And what are the, yeah, mainly daffodils and irises that come out. I got a few little, I do want to put more bulbs out there so I get more stuff coming up. But right now that's more of my hobby spot.
Yeah, put some dahlias in there and stuff. That'd be awesome. And another thing that sort of separates the two, and I want to say, I think it's clear, but we're not shitting on home gardeners or hobby gardeners. This is great. It was just a gateway drug for me. One of the other things that separates is the experiment portion of the garden, where you're like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know if it will work, but I'm gonna try anyway, because if it does, I have planned for what I'm going to do with it. You know, last year for us, it was peanuts. Utter failure. This year it's going to be okra. Why not? Why not try it? And I think that's something that really differentiates, because you know, your home gardeners, they tend to just plant the same things every year.
Plant same thing, and also like, and then it goes into the planting. Like, they tend to plant the same thing with little, very little variation, and not much crop rotation.
Yeah. So then chemical, ugh, I hate to sound like I'm like looking down on them, but then chemical amendments start to come in because it's easier and you're not putting in that amount of time. And you know,
Yeah,
what
like
we talked.
I had a neighbor that I would drive, like, before the he sold the place. It would You drive by, and every summer you could go, like, yep, there's his squash and zucchinis, there's his pumpkins, always in the same spots, always growing the same way, like always the same.
And this is an arm in the, you know, the multi-headed hydra creature of biodiversity, changing things and moving things and preserving the biome and making sure that, you know, the microbiology and biology of your soil is always tenable and always useful, because you're putting so much time into it that it's important to target sustainability. And yeah, that's the big difference between a home gardener and a homestead garden, you know, say. And I, you know, my garden is big. I mean, I don't know, and it's sprawling and sort of curving around and more naturally
Yeah,
formed.
I almost say yours is not too much bigger than what mine is, but yeah, yours is much more sprawled out, whereas mine is just a large single plot that I've been by cultivating for 30 some odd, th almost 40 years, or 35 years.
We have this sort of naturally flowing, constantly changing paths leading you to other sections. You know, there's a wall of sunflowers. You know, when you go around that wall of sunflowers, it's a nice little seating area and a fire pit, you know, stuff like that. And you know, we like doing that. And another thing is, we expand every year. You know, you're staying in the same spot. You're rotating. You're fixing your
But
garden.
I'm also increasing my water. I'm converting a huge section. I mean, I could say huge, but about a third of my lawn, I am converting back to field slash wildflower.
Right, which is amazing. That's so great. That's gonna be awesome. I can't wait to see
Yes,
it.
I'm looking, that's one of those things I'm really looking forward to doing, is because I have that, because like my long-term planning is I want to have a degree of a monarch sanctuary or butterfly sanctuary. So I'm focusing very much on milkweed, and I've gotten so far the three of the local varieties of milkweed you find.
And you know, native bees are going to love this too.
Yes,
This is really
bees,
great.
pollinators, butterflies, critters, because the critters love all the seeds and stuff, which is just, and then I get better predators in, and it just becomes this whole like cycle of life and everything. Good. I
Well,
love the idea of my huge diversity of my area.
and you bring up critters and animals and stuff. Let's talk a little bit about that. Like, you know, obviously you have a flock of chickens. It started as a you know, caring for your sister's chickens, right? And now you are growing this flock. I can hear the little peepers in the back. You haven't sent any pictures lately.
Oh yeah, they're getting big. There's also one I may have I accidentally injured one of their legs when I transferred
Uh-oh.
them from the box to the dog crate, and it's like it's doing fine. It still moves around, but when it's like you can just tell it's like you're limpy. But it's one of like there's so little, like there's nothing you can do, like other than just like, hey, you're eating, you're drinking. You run around with the rest of them, so you're not suffering. You're not like hurting, and you're not like if he wasn't eating or drinking, then I'd be more concerned. But he's just like, no, he's acting like a chick with a messed up leg.
Well, the birds are really adaptable to injury. They, you know,
Yes, they are.
their
Especially that
physiology,
dog. Yeah.
their physiology really lends to recovery.
Yeah.
I when I lived in
Hey, leave them alone.
speaking of the chickens, the cats are going after him again. When
Yes,
I
the
lived
cats
in
are
Florida
always trying to, like, do they reach the paw in and just kind of like, I
when
want to touch them.
I lived in Florida, there was a crane that would come and eat lizards in my yard, and it had broken its neck at some point, and it had this like 90-degree turn in its neck, and then another 90-degree turn that brought it up. It was bizarre, but it would eat. I would watch it just, you know, chomp down lizards and stuff that were running around. Birds are super adaptable. So are you, I mean, the chickens, you've kind of got your hands full, you know, you've got and that's one of the differences between us is you also have a full-time job when,
Yes.
you know, by the time this comes out, I am, running a farmer's market on the board for another farmer's market and hopefully gotten into a third farmer's market. Plus, I've been elected into a position in local government. So not exactly a full-time job, but this is my full-time job, the house and the home. So it's easier for us to take big jumps forward. And we're going to expand to chickens this year, and we'd really like to get a pig as well, but we have to build structures for that. So it might get kicked down the can, you know, the can down the road a little bit, but we'll see. Are you ever considering adding things into the mix there, like rabbits or quail or anything like that?
Nope, I'm happy with my chickens and eggs, and like I do not have plans to expand at all. I don't. Yeah, I am perfectly content with the size that I'm about to go up to, and we'll leave it at that level for a bit.
Your growth is more directed in the produce and the and you know, you have talked about getting into breeding chickens.
Yes, especially with the breed I just got, because I got the Ayame Siamas, which are the all those nice, pretty black ones, and I've now thought about because they are a tropical bird. They've adapted to up here, but they don't produce much. So I'm starting to think of like I have a what is it, the rock beer rooster, which is that the kind of the malted white and black feathers, and they produce really well. But he's, of course, the only rooster I have right now. But I'm hoping I get some black roosters, and then I can potentially start like mixing and matching with different breeds and see if I just get these hybrid crossbred roosters, chickens that can produce well and look really cool.
Right. Well, and the IAMs, those are, we talked about in a previous episode, they're the thing that makes them all black is a recessive gene. And any other, you know, crossbreeding is going to tend to dominate it. So that's a challenge. That is very ambitious, and that should have came in up earlier with your ambitions. Yes. I mean, that's huge. And there will be some investment with, I mean, are you going to do like incubators, anything like that?
I will get like the cheap $30 incubator off of Amazon.
Okay.
Like I don't plan on like making like a massive effort. Like I might do 6 eggs at a time in spring or later on next winter. Like I have no intention of doing like the guy I bought the chicks from had like 24. He just hatched and was incubating more and getting ready to hatch even more. And it's like, yeah, like I'm not going to go that ambitious. I'm just going for like, I will put my rooster or whatever rooster I pick in with a couple specific hens. And then a week later I will take their eggs and see what I do. Like I've never tried breeding either. So it's like, how long do I leave the rooster in with the hens before I can know that their eggs are fertilized? Like right. I know every egg I pull out of my coop right now is most definitely fertilized. Cause you can, there's like a little like dot in the egg that you can, that is there if it's fertilized. And it's like, yeah, all of my eggs are currently fertilized. I could honestly just start incubating right now, but they wouldn't be the pretty black ones.
Right. Okay. And if you breed this super chicken that you have in your head, yes. I mean, you're talking about selling whole chick, like an adult chicken or a pullet or something like that.
Yep. Or chicks or whatever.
Yeah. That's really cool. I think that's really neat. And, not something I've ever considered trying, so I'll probably just leave it to you.
it's not a huge amount of work because, I mean, it's really just you have the incubator, you incubate it, you rotate them twice a day, or you get you buy the fancy one that automatically rotates them.
Right.
Which is, my sister said, my sister did say that was a great investment when she did. So that's probably, if I do go that route, I probably will get the incubator that does the auto rotating.
Right.
And then, yeah, just making sure that they're fed and watered and have clean hay and let them grow and keep the cats away from them. And
right. Well, you got to
it's not a huge amount of work.
Yeah. And you got to try that pup tent idea. I'm telling you.
Yes. The pup tent idea. I was actually looking at them at Walmart. There's no tiny tents at Walmart right now. Like, they had bigger ones, but not like little tiny ones.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw one on their website that was like $30. It was like a two-person. I'd loan you mine, but I don't want a bunch of chicken shit on it.
I have a tiny pop-up. It's in the garage somewhere. I just have to find it. And then also clearing out a spot in the basement that would then in turn be enough room for said tent.
Right, and ambitious product or project.
I've got lots of clear space in my basement. It's just a matter of like reorganizing and getting all the recycling that I've been letting build up, taken care of. It's mainly cardboard down there.
Well, you can use that cardboard, you know, in your compost.
Yes. I use the cardboard in your compost once I get it going. Yes, I know. I want to get one of the industrial cardboard shredders. And I say industrial, but like the home shredder for cardboard.
Mulch.
We missed this yesterday, but I think one of the do's of composting is smaller is better.
Yes. Yes. Shredding and tearing and letting it cook. But animals is really one of those things that is a major difference between a home garden and, a homesteader. You start integrating animals into it because of the number of benefits. You know, you can sell them, you can sell what they produce, you can sell their meat, you can use their manure to compost, and that's another
one of raves about, like, everyone I've given my eggs to has just been like, your eggs are so orange. And it's just like,
that's
farm fresh eggs.
Meg was making those Hawaiian rolls with the eggs, and they actually, because they were bigger than like most recipes, it threw off the recipe. So
yes,
they were still amazing.
They're white, yeah, because like the big ones have a degree more of egg whites to them. Like I noticed their yolk is about the same size as the regular ones, but there's more whites to them.
Yeah.
So I found I like using those for when I'm making actual like good homemade waffles, like where you actually like sour cream and then fold the whipped egg whites into the waffles.
Yep.
Yeah, those are good waffles.
But yeah, that separation of utilizing your animals to enhance your homestead is a major, major difference. You know, so many people do bees, and the bees are going to be massively helpful in pollination. You know, you do chickens for their manure, you know, that
their
kind
manure,
of
manure, the eggs, and yeah,
potentially meat.
Unless I find somebody that can cheaply butcher them for me, I'm not that kind of homesteader. I don't like killing and butchering and all the processing stuff. That's not for
me. Oh, Megan and I are really good at it as a team. Yeah. We have to split it because she doesn't like to kill them and I don't like pulling out their guts, but we get it done.
I don't like any of that. Like I even as a person who has hunted and butchered a field or field dressed a deer, it is just like, nope, there's a reason I don't hunt anymore.
Right. We don't mind it. It's not something that we do, you know, but it's something we can do, have done. And we've found a pretty gentle way of doing it, too. So, when you end up with an old rooster, you know, it's just time. Let us know, because we'll dispatch the rooster and make a lovely coq au vin. Which is traditionally made with an old rooster.
There's very specific recipes you have to use for older birds because the older birds do not taste good.
Not necessarily.
And a lot of times
they're gamey.
And it's a lot of those like they're gamey for me it's also like I've had attachments to these birds for however many years of having them. It's like no, I can't eat T-Rex or Roadrunner, like it just wouldn't feel right.
Now, critters you mentioned. Yes. How? I mean, integrating critters into our lives here, right? Like, one of my ambitions for this year is to train the pair of ravens that we have that live here to protect the chickens. Which is something you can do. Basically, you just invite them in with food, you know, and, you know, they already follow Comrade around. And when he's done with a mouse or a rat or something, they come by and finish it off, you know, in this weird little symbiotic relationship between the two of them.
Yeah, I have protector ravens. I already have those. They just showed up. Like,
yeah.
I didn't have to do anything. They just showed up.
Yeah.
And like, I go out there and look and it's like when I walk outside and all of a sudden, like I just see two ravens fly off out of the coop and I'm just like, yeah, they're just hanging out.
Yeah. They're going to protect that area because it's a food source.
Yes. Yes. And it is a food source. I've caught them when the snow was really high and the chickens wouldn't go out in the snow, but they get really aggressive with the bread products and they throw it out in the snow.
Oh.
And then they'd all just lament and sit and stare at the edge of the snow line and look at the bread that they've thrown out in the snow. And then the ravens would just come down and be like, oh yeah, we'll do that. We'll take care of that.
Yeah. So what's your motivation to encourage critters though? You said
I like wildlife.
Okay.
I have possums that go into my trash and I don't care. I don't care if I have to pick up trash because I like possums. Possums are great. They eat ticks.
Tons of ticks.
Rabies resistance and like whatnot. Like, so raccoons less so much, skunks less so much because they can get aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
But overall it's like, no, like I have a family of skunks that come around. It's like, no, I like my wildlife for the sake of I live in the wild.
Yeah.
Going to be wildlife. It's easier to accept them and just make them places to where they can be around and not disturb the garden or the chickens and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a choice in critters. They're here. I'm just renting the place, I guess.
Exactly. That's how I look at it. Is like, yeah, it's like we are guests in their backyard, and I'm not going to, like, I mean, I hate to use California as an example, but you ever hear about like all these, the rich McMansions that have gone up into the hills of Beverly and da da da, and they complain about, oh, there was a puma in my backyard. It's like, no, you built your house in the puma's backyard.
Yeah.
You know, Colorado's the other place you see a lot of those stories of like, oh my God, this mountain lion came into my yard. It's like, yes. You built your yard in their territory.
Yeah. And I guess that's another major difference between, you know, a home gardener and a homesteader is really just wanting that biodiversity and accepting that biodiversity and finding ways to work within that diversity to the point that you're encouraging it.
Yes.
You know, if you have better pollinators, better plants, better trees, you're going to have more biodiversity by default. And there's, we say it all the time, how important biodiversity is to sustainability. And, you know, here we are, broken shovel, homesteading for a sustainable future, right? Like,
yeah. And like what I mentioned, getting like small critters into my wildflower area, because it is going to draw in small critters,
mm-hmm.
but that's also going to draw in more the fox more, the skunk more, and other critters into there. And other bigger predators like fisher cats and stuff will potentially go after the other prey and not after my chickens.
Right. Well, and you know, when we talk about squirrels and chipmunks and little fellas like that, you know, they're going to bring in acorns and seeds and plant other plants that deserve to be in the area. They're surprisingly good at it.
Yeah, and the bear, I don't know if it was the bear or somebody else, they eat my berries, and then they came over to where my stump in my front yard is, and now I have a berry bush growing over there that I didn't put anything over there.
Yeah,
but I have a berry plant growing over there because some wild critter that eats berries decided to take a poo over by mm-hmm. the stump. And now I have a berry bush growing, and I love it.
Yeah, it's great. We have our bear. At one end of the property, we have wild grapes. And in the opposite corner, we've got just prolific, like alpine strawberries and, you know, really like ground cover and berries growing like crazy. And that, you know, the bears kind of tend to stay over in those sections. They might cross through in the middle of the night, but they don't bother with my compost or my trash because they're so well fed with their natural diet that they have no urge to, you know, rip open a trash can.
Yep.
So, what else? Is there anything else that's really different? I mean, obviously homesteaders are better.
After saying we're not crapping on home gardens
or yeah, I know.
Hobbyist gardeners and all that, but yeah, we are better.
Well, and even now I just looked over my phone and there's like, I've got an email from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and I'm like, ooh, I wonder what that's about. Birds. Bringing in birds. We've got this lovely barred owl. We've got several red-tailed hawks. I mean, it's great. And, you know, massive flocks of geese come through here every year and just sort of stomp around, pooping all over everything. And turkeys as well. And it's really nice. I
haven't seen my flock of turkeys all winter. It's been very weird.
I was just thinking about that this morning. A couple weeks ago, I was down at our town center talking to the town historian, and I saw like five or six turkeys going up over the hill right there. But I haven't had them up here. It's strange.
No, I haven't. Like, I see them down on 14. There's a farm there where they have one of their like their grain storage areas for the cows, and of course there's always a massive flock of crows, ravens, and turkeys around there.
Yeah,
but I haven't seen them up near my house at all. Like, I don't see I haven't seen their tracks. I just have not I don't know where they went, but they are either they and likely they just found a nice little grove somewhere that they are just mowing down on something.
Yeah, and
you have just out of spot. Yeah,
you have a lot. I mean, and again, this is March 1st that we're talking, but you have a lot more cleared ground. Like you've had a lot more snow melt than me.
Yes, like I have. Like my front yard, not so much. My backyard a little bit. Like I still got a good cover. Like the only spots that really I can see are my very front yard, and the spot my path, because those melt faster for
some. Right. Yeah, I'm getting some patches around the house. It's really interesting. This is another thing I think that homesteaders sort of think about. We started, we've been talking about doing some cold frames for a few things. And now this year we're looking around with this new addition on, and it's the second year. We're like, okay, we figured it out. It took us 5 years to figure out where to put cold frames, but now we have found the perfect spot by watching the sun, watching the snow melt, and watching, what happens in different areas. And now you can look at an area and say, this has happened consistently, and I can rely upon this happening now. So now, and that wall that runs, that you would walk past to get to my woodshed, we're going to start putting cold frames right through there. Just makes perfect sense. It gets excellent sun all winter. So, I'm not sure how to wrap this one up, Eric. Because I feel like we're missing 8 billion things.
I think we covered everything I had in my little bit of notes.
Yeah. Well, as everybody that's listening to this, when it releases, I'm assuming that the Verscher Artisan and Farmers Market at 27 Verscher Center Road is doing very well every Sunday from 12:30 to 3:30, from 5:19 to 9:15. Chelsea Farmers Market, of course, Friday afternoons from 3 to 6. Norwich Farmers Market, I don't know, still waiting on an email. And I'm anticipating that everything is going really well for us this year.
Yes.
And if
El Nino excluded.
What's that?
El Nino excluded.
Yeah, who knows? And I was kind of thinking about El Nino as this, like, I don't want to say red herring, but like it's just taking all the blame for all the climate change, the two. And it's,
It really is. It really is. We should do it. I think I suggest this already. I think we should do an El Nino, like update El Nino status of like the things that have been going on. Cause there's been some, we shouldn't talk about this in a future on an episode that's going out in the future.
I'll reach out to Serena. I know what you're thinking about. So that's Broken Shovel Homesteading for a Sustainable Future. Homesteading versus gardening. It's very interesting. And I think, I would like to hear people's opinions, if anyone has one. And like I said at the beginning, brokenshovel802@gmail.com. Tell us how you feel there is a difference between a gardener and a homesteader, and why we're wrong or always right. Eric, thank you. And let's go enjoy March 1st.
Ooh, March 1st.